Good afternoon and welcome back to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM on the dial. Lakeshore Public Radio, or lakeshorepublicmedia.org and radio.org is where you'll find us online. I'm Tom Lounges. It's Midwest Beat Time, which means it's time for some great music and a little chatter with those that make it. Coming up on the second hour, as I mentioned, we've got Freddie Salem, guitarist and vocalist of the legendary Outlaws Southern Rock Band. They are reissuing a concert, or re-releasing, I think, for the first time. We'll find out the specifics. From 1981, a live show done in Germany. We'll find out how that went, and you'll get a chance to hear some of the music from the CD and DVD collection. But coming up first, we've got a brand new band you may or may not already be aware of. I know our good friend Greg Kovach, who does the prog rock show here at Lakeshore Public Radio, will definitely be on board for this group and this album. The group is called Epic Tantrum. They're out of New York, and they have a brand new album called Abandoned. And then there's a second live disc in there called In the Stranger's Room. We're going to talk to one of the members of Epic Tantrum in just a few minutes. We'll have Mr. Ross joining us. And Greg Ross is the bass player and vocalist of Epic Tantrum. But first, as I like to do, let's let the music do the talking. Now, as I mentioned prior to the show starting, if you're a fan of groups like Dream Theater or Queensryche, you'll really like this stuff. It's prog rock. Modern style. It's good stuff, so check it out. This is the opening track of Abandoned by Epic Tantrum called Don't Bother. And don't you bother turning the dial. You're going to want to stay right here for 2 hours.
We'll be right back.
New music. The band is Epic Tantrum, the album Abandoned. In the Stranger's Room, it's a double disc set. Abandoned is the studio recordings. In the Stranger's Room is the live recordings of some of the songs on Abandoned and others. These guys are out in New York. I gotta admit, I am a newbie to their sound. This is their debut album. I got it from their publicist, and when I got it, I thought, this is an interesting cover. I like this. I love the masked man, or is it a woman, or is it an alien? I don't know. And an abandoned street, very Omega Man-ish, in a sense. But we're going to find out more about this band, and as I mentioned earlier, if you're a fan of groups like Dream Theater or Queensryche or some of the earlier prog stuff, even some Hawkwind may be thrown in there, you're going to love these guys. It took me a listen or two to kind of get it wrapped around my head because there's so much going on here. And we've got one of the band members with us right now, Greg Ross, bass player and vocalist of Epic Tantrum. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. It's actually a fairly beautiful day here in Northwest Indiana, Chicagoland. We're enjoying the last gasp, I guess, of the Indian summer. I guess it'd be Indian summer. So anyway, I don't know. Are you in New York right now?
Yeah, well, we're actually up in Syracuse, New York. So when you say the weather is nice there, that has a totally different meaning to us. So we don't have snow on the ground here, so that's a good day.
Oh, okay. I gotta say, I got the album and the CD, and just the packaging alone intrigued me. The quality of it, it's a trifold. It's got a booklet in it. It's got the live disc, the recorded disc, studio, and the cover art. Let's talk about that first, because like most great prog rock groups, the cover entices you. Whether you go back to King Crimson or even the Hawkwind albums, any of that kind of stuff, Gong, Man, the album covers always seem to be the hook to get people to pick the album up. And I've got to say, you got a home run with this first album as far as just the graphics alone.
Well, thanks. The artwork was designed by Johannes from Dangerous Age Graphics, who has done covers for both King Crimson and Dream Theater. And, you know, everybody in Epic Tantrum is old enough to remember going to record stores before, you know, you could just download everything and hear it or go online and hear it. And, you know, for us, half of the appeal was, you know, going through those record bins and seeing albums that jumped out at you. A lot of the times I was buying records based on their cover.
I did the same.
Yeah. And, you know, and sometimes you got home and you were really disappointed, and sometimes, you know, you were, the cover lived up to the expectations. So it was a definite goal of ours to make sure that the artwork was intriguing and the packaging was, you know, top notch. I mean, you know, as a band, you never know how many albums you're going to actually get to make. So we figured if we're going to do this, let's do it right. And we went all out. And, we're really proud of how the final product came out, both, you know, the physical CD and the music. But Johannes did a great job. He put up with a lot of stuff from us, making little annoying changes that no one would care about but us as the band.
Did you give him kind of free rein, or did you come up with the concept of this masked being?
Johannes heard the tracks. I was working with him on a different project, and he kept asking if he could hear the band, and I kept saying, Johannes, we can't afford you. We can't afford you, because... he's, like I said, he's worked with some pretty huge bands in the past. Mm-hmm. And finally, after enough of his asking, I sent him some tracks, and he called me the next day. And sort of like you, it took a few listens for him to get it. And then he said, I think it was Howling, which is one of the instrumentals. Not the Howling. That's not an instrumental, so ignore me. But I forget which song it was. But one of the instrumentals, he said, I had this in mind, and... I had this, he had created this image, and when he heard that song, it popped into his head. So he sent it to us. He sent us like three or four ideas, and this was the one that really jumped out. And, we sent it back with lots of little annoying changes. Like I said, I think we actually got into a whole thing where we're like, can you move the moon behind the logo an eighth of an inch one way or the other? We were wow. A pain in the ass to work with.
Well, that seems to lend itself to the style of music as well, because you guys are very intricate, and I can imagine that you're pretty much perfectionist, especially, like you said, your first album out, you want it to be just right, and there's a lot going on with this record, and there's only four of you in the, no, there's five of you, No, there's four of us. And then guests. That's what I was looking at. So tell me the process. The band's been around in some incarnation since 2007 with Peter and Paul, right?
Yeah, so Peter, Paul, and I all took guitar lessons from the same guitar instructor here in Syracuse.
Okay.
Peter and Paul are his golden students, and I am not. And that's why I play bass and they play guitar. So Peter and Paul both play classical guitar as well. And in 2007, they started recording classical guitar pieces in what we have now called the Stranger's Room, in an early incarnation of it. That's our studio.
Okay.
And that was sort of the earliest formation. The band itself kind of went through a bunch of starts and stops. The real formation of the band was around 2016, 2015. When we actually became a band and started rehearsing as a band. So the 2007 thing, it makes it sound like we didn't do anything for a long time. It's a little bit, that's not entirely accurate. But to go back to that, yes, there's a lot of perfectionists. You know, one of the blessings of having our own studio to record in is that we can tinker, constantly. In the old days, if you would have recorded a record in a studio, your time was up and you were sort of done.
Right.
It's also a curse because you can tinker infinitely and just keep going and going. So at some point, you just have to move on. And in fact, that's where the inspiration for the name came from. Abandoned was, there's a saying, art is never finished. It's merely abandoned. And at some point we felt we just had to abandon where we were and move on, or else we would still be mixing the album.
I was going to say, when did you know that it was the best it could be, and when to stop tinkering? Because when you do own your own studio, and I'm thinking ET Records is your own label as well, so this is kind of a do-it-yourself project in a very real sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. So it is. We are very much a self-contained unit. Like, we want to do as much of it on our own. We are totally DIY. I don't know if that's because we're control freaks or just because, this is how we want to do things. My background is in the music industry, so it's not entirely like we didn't know what we were doing. I've been involved in putting out records for longer than I want to admit. So, obviously you mentioned in the intro that, our publicist reached out to you and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, ET is our own label. I had talked to a few friends who owned record labels, and, people were interested in putting the record out. And in the end, I just sort of said, let's just do it on our own. Let's just, cause at the end of the day, we want to have that control. It's our baby. Mm-hmm. And, we will sink or swim on our own.
That said, now that it's done, the physical product is here. How are you marketing in the age of COVID?
Well, we put the record out back in January, kind of like a soft release. And then, our record release party in New York City was canceled 3 days before, because that's when like the COVID outbreak really hit. That Rudy Gobert NBA news conference, which seems so long ago, I think was 3 days before our record release party. So it's been a challenge. We haven't been able to tour. We haven't really been able to do the things that you'd normally do. So we've been, promoting on the internet. We've been involved in two so far of those of internet virtual streaming concerts, one that we have coming up next Saturday. And a lot of it has just been, trying to use the internet and social media as best as we can to get the word out. It's definitely been a challenge trying to promote an album this way, because, nothing moves the needle like live shows.
Right.
And so it definitely has been a challenge. Yeah, there's no other way to put it.
Okay, how has the media been reacting? You actually got an endorsement from the guys in Dream Theater, as I understand. Is that correct?
Well, we have a quote from Mike Portnoy saying, that we're which was he called us a perfect blend of prog and metal. I don't remember the exact quote. We've gotten, most of the reviews have been positive, almost all of them. We haven't gotten we've gotten a lot of press. We've gotten a lot of reviews, but it's, you know, been from mostly like the prog sites and the alternative sites, the places that, you know, are really supportive of this type of music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all been very positive, nightlife, luckily. We've been thrilled.
Let's play another song, and then we're going to talk about Sea of Tranquility, one of the projects. I'm kind of leaning towards Accessory, but I'll play whatever you think you want to play.
You mentioned the Sea of Tranquility virtual concert, and the song we're doing on that is Outside the Wire, so maybe you want to go to that one, but it, you know, dealer's choice. You decide what you want to play.
All right, Outside the Wire it is. That is track number 5 off the first disc, the studio disc, Abandoned. We're talking with Epic Tantrum, a great new band that you're going to want to hear more of. Greg Ross, bass player, vocalist, and founding member with us. So we'll be talking on that. But check it out right now. Then we'll be featuring some more music a little later in the show.
Sleep postponed. I have a digital.
Stammering and Stumbling Outside the Wire. Outside the Wire is the title there, and that's off Abandon, the debut album from Epic Tantrum, band out of Syracuse, New York. And we are talking with founding member, bassist, vocalist, Greg Ross of the band. And that song is going to be played at Sea of Tranquility, as Greg said. So let's look into that. Fall Fest, Sea of Tranquility is a unique new live festival done virtually, as I understand, on November 21st. Greg, tell me about Sea of Tranquility.
Well, first, I want to just clarify one thing. I'm not the singer in the band. I do sing on some of the songs, but Peter's the singer. You don't want me to be the singer.
Oh, okay.
You wouldn't be interviewing us in that case. But, so Sea of Tranquility is a webzine that's been around for a long time that really champions progressive rock and jazz and hard rock and metal. And they will, they gave us some of the best reviews that they did, actually two reviews, a print and a YouTube review of the album. And Peter Pardo, who runs the site, just really loved the album. And so when the idea of Sea of Tranquility Fest came up, he asked us to be a part of it. So Sea of Tranquility Fest is a virtual concert that'll, the world premiere is Saturday, November 21st at 7:00 p.m. And we're a part of it. Doro Pesh is a part of it. Uriah Heep is a part of it. Gentle Giant and Fans is a part of it, it's obviously Gentle Giant doesn't exist anymore, but
right.
They're a part of it. Andy Powell from Wishbone Ash. Trying to think, I don't want to forget anybody. I'll get in trouble, so I'm Googling quickly to see the whole lineup. Let's see. So Mark Kelly from Marillion, which to me that's the most exciting part. I was a huge Marillion fan before I discovered punk rock, and then I kind of abandoned my roots until a few years ago. So he has a new band called Marathon. He's a part of it. Here's a weird one. Jack Hughes, who
Wang
is best
Chung?
Known for being the main singer and one of the two songwriters in Wang Chung, has a prog project that just came out. And so he's a part of that. Let's see here. We have Jeff Young, who was in Megadeth in the past, Lance King, Luke Fortini. There's a whole bunch. If you go to seaoftranquility.org, you can see the whole list of who's playing, and you can probably find there's a Sea of Tranquility Fest 2020 page on Facebook, or if you go to epictantrum.com, you can find all of that information as well, or if you go to Epic Tantrum Band on Facebook, it's all there. So it's there'll be some interviews that Pete has done, and then it's just a lot of music and videos people have never seen. It's one of these virtual concerts, and this one is a benefit for the Humane Society's COVID-19 response.
Excellent.
So there'll be merch for sale. Again, those links are over on seaoftranquility.org. And the sales of the merch, proceeds from that are going towards the Humane Society's COVID-19 response.
Well, thank you for that. I am a fundraiser with our local Humane Society in Gary, Indiana, and we definitely, all the Humane Societies need help right now. All the local fundraising has basically been washed out, whether it's a bingo night or a bunco night or a yard sale. Pretty much everything we do to raise money during the year has been canceled or postponed indefinitely. We do a big, which I'll probably talk to Chip about, we do a big event every year called Pet Rock, in which we get local celebs and national celebs to donate signed guitars or drum heads or things like that. We auction them off, and all the money goes to the animals while we have local bands play. So that's even been canceled this year. So kudos to you guys for picking the Humane Society and helping the animals. A lot of people forget about them in these kind of times.
Yeah, that was actually Pete's choice, so he gets all the credit for that. But we were happy to be a part of it. And to your point, I don't think people realize what's going on with a lot of charities, including the Humane Society. So
right.
Hopefully people buy a lot of merch and help us support them. And hopefully people tune in and really just enjoy the show. It's an eclectic mix of music. So there's a little something for everybody on there.
Now, obviously, virtual concerts are done in different aspects, different ways. Are you guys going to be live in different areas, like a Zoom-type concert? Are these pre-recorded videos that will be compiled and broadcast, or a little of both?
It's all pre-recorded
okay.
and compiled into one big show. you know, we have bands from literally all over the globe. We don't have the ability to, you know, make that happen live all at once. And this way we don't have to worry about technical issues. This is the third of these type of projects that I've been involved with on this scale. And, they seem to work, you know, like it would be great if we could have everybody playing live, but
right.
The pre-recorded aspect makes it possible for us to do this. And, you know, everybody's trying to do what they can to help and to stay busy and to stay creative. And so I think what's interesting is you're getting to see bands in ways that you would never have seen otherwise, you know, in their kitchens playing in other places. And so the creativity really comes out in a lot of this, which is an interesting twist that I don't think people expected when all this came down. So, it's all pre-recorded, but a lot of it's never been seen before. Even if you have seen or you know some of this, like I said, it's a wide mix. There's so much stuff on there. You're going to discover something new that you love.
Okay. And again, this is happening on Saturday, November 21st. Is there a time, a central time?
It'll be
7 p.m. Eastern.
7 o'clock p.m., yeah.
Okay. 7 p.m. Eastern. So,
and it'll be on both Facebook and YouTube at the same time, and there'll be chat rooms going on where you can talk with other fans and comment. Which has also been, and some of the bands will be jumping in during those things and, you know, talking to fans as well. So that always makes, adds to a nice touch where there's right. Like a community aspect to these shows.
SeaTranquility.org for more details on the full lineup. And I imagine it'll be a virtual tip jar donation button there. So people can, if they're enjoying it, they can give to the cause. And merch, you mentioned merch. Is there special merch being made for this event?
Yeah, so if you go to that seaoftranquility.org or epictantrum.com, you can find the links, and we have t-shirts that we've made that have the event and then all the bands playing on the back, listed on the back. So the front is the logo for the event, the back is all the bands. And those come in like t-shirts and hoodies and long sleeve shirts and all different shapes and sizes, I guess. And then we also have merch from some of the bands participating. So one of the goals of this is to help bands that, you know, aren't able to gig. So you can buy merch from some of the bands that are participating right from that store as well, and that money goes to helping those bands.
Okay. You mentioned that you got enamored in punk rock for a while. I like the fact that you've come full circle. What brought you back to the progressive side after punk? It's a complete different dynamic of music.
When I discovered punk, and like when I was like 15 or so or 16, I didn't forget my sort of proggier roots and stuff like that. You know, Rush was my favorite band when you had favorite bands, when that stuff mattered.
Right.
And I never stopped loving Rush. I just maybe didn't admit it as loudly as I used to. I think I got, you know, as I got more immersed into the punk scene, and I worked at a punk label for a long time, you know, there was always sort of like, what else do you like type of a thing. It wasn't that I kind of completely abandoned the music, you know, like Rush and Marillion and some of that progressive stuff that I had loved. It was just my focus was elsewhere.
Okay.
And I still love all of that, you know, all of the punk music that I listen to I still listen to it. I just think I'm a little bit more varied in my tastes. And I played in, you know, some different punk bands throughout college and all that sort of stuff. So I think from a standpoint of being in a band that plays progressive type of music, and I'm not really sure that progressive is the right label for us. We're kind of, I don't think we really fit in any category comfortably. We're sort of an alternative band. We're sort of a progressive band. We're sort of all over the map.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to be able to play the type of music that Epic Tantrum plays, you have to have a certain skill level. And, you know, until I was comfortable enough to even attempt it, I would never have tried to have been in a band like this. Just, you know, these are not easy songs to play.
Right.
In rehearsal the other day, we were working on a song, and we realized that we were going to have to find other people to be the band because we were writing songs that we were having trouble playing. So, which is our goal, not our goal, but one of, you know, what keeps it interesting for us is making the songs we're writing interesting and a challenge in playing them. So I think as I got more comfortable as a musician, I was more willing to branch out and play in bands that weren't just, you know, punk bands.
What drew you to music early on as a child or a teen? When you first started getting into music, what was it that was the flame that drew you to it?
I don't know. As young as I can remember, I was always into music. I remember getting into a fight with my mother in a Kmart because I wanted two albums and she was only willing to buy me one.
What were those albums?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask that. I was hoping to move on quickly before you asked that. Well, you're in Gary, Indiana. So one was a Jackson 5 album.
Okay.
And the other one was the Mickey Mouse Club album. And I ended up going home with the Mickey Mouse Club album, mostly because I was in love with Lisa Welchel, who was the blonde on the
in
the Mickey Mouse Club, who went on to be on Facts of Life.
Right. I know Lisa.
Yeah. So that, you know, that was my earliest memory of buying records. That was always my thing. I think in my family, that was sort of how I self-identified as the music person in the family. And, you know, with all of my cousins and everybody else, I was the music nut, and that sort of became my personality. And as I grew older, you know, and started to listening to music other than what was on my parents' radio and kind of defining my own personality, that was the part of my personality I was happy to express to people. You know, when you're young and you're trying to, and awkward and all that sort of stuff, I kind of hid behind the bands that I loved. So I would wear the band t-shirts and, you know, that was
your identity.
That was how I wanted to identify. I think I had a different rock band shirt for every day of the week. I think my mother complained about it every day as I went to school.
That sounds like me back in high school, back in the 70s. I was like, yeah, that's how we did it.
Yeah.
You were either a sports guy or a rock guy, and sometimes you could blend the worlds, but it didn't work too often.
Yeah, I fortunately was able to blend it a little bit, but I think, you know, I think most people just saw me as I was the annoying Rush fan that every school had, you know, and I do think that, you know, I was attracted to them in part because I was the Rush fan. Like, they were the band that I didn't know anybody else who liked Rush at that point. So, mm-hmm. They became my band, and I became very possessive of them, and it just grew from there. It's been the one constant in my life is just a love of music. And while the music may change stylistically and whatnot, that's been the one constant.
Okay. What are the things that's unique about this too is disc two in the Stranger's Room. These are live recordings of some of the songs that are on Abandoned and other ones. Now, where were those recorded? Are those older recordings, or are they done right before with this project in mind?
So I am I'm the brat in the band. I'm the one who's always kind of pushing and complaining and you know, just acting bratty.
Okay.
And when we were mixing the studio tracks, we had started playing live, and I didn't really feel like I liked the way they were coming out live more than in some cases. I felt the energy of the live performances was different. Some of the songs were different. And because there are some jazz influences to our record, but the most mm-hmm. jazzy thing we kind of do is we look at the songs as kind of like live. They're always changing alive, not live. You know, they're always changing. You know, and there's improv elements to all the songs. So I kind of felt like the band live was a totally different beast than on album. And I wanted people to hear that. So I really pushed everybody into, let's do a double CD and let's do these songs live as well as the studio tracks. I wanted people to see both sides of the band. And going back to what I said earlier, you know, you don't know how many albums you're going to get to put out. So let's put it out there. I also completely understood how audacious and maybe obnoxious or bold or whatever way you want to look at it, it was for an unknown band to put out a double CD. And that was part of it. It was like, we were making a statement. We were saying, hey, you know what? We're a good enough band to put out a double CD. And I wanted people to hear all sides of the band. And so, after we had finished recording all of the Abandoned side tracks, the studio tracks, we went and we just played everything live. And so that's what you hear there. And then we took some of the songs that that we weren't putting on the album, we added those to the live side just to get even more material out there.
Okay.
So that's sort of how it came about, just me being a brat.
Well, let's play something live and give them a sample. What would you like to play? And we'll come back and we'll wrap things up. What's a song that you think would be a strong one to play here?
Again, I'm going to default to Dealer's Choice over here. I'm actually running over to where I have a CD so I can cheat. You know, the Letting Go is the song that's sort of been the was the first song that got a lot of attention. And in a way for us, it was an important song because the goal was to write something that felt like very cinematic in a musical form, like a journey. And Letting Go was the one that we felt was our first successful attempt at that.
Okay.
So I guess I would go with Letting Go, but again, that's your choice.
I was actually leaning to that one, but okay, we'll do that. We'll be back with Greg a final time right after this. Let's check out the band live. This is Epic Tantrum, new stuff.
Sleeping sound as you untie me from the mat.
Awesome stuff. Letting Go Live. That is Epic Tantrum off the Abandoned In the Stranger's Room double disc set. 19 songs in all over the course of two CDs. And what I like about this is that, you know, when you're in the studio, you can do a lot of tricks and a lot of fixes. When you're live, not as easy. And this album shows that these guys have the goods to deliver along with the studio track. So my guest is Greg. Greg is the bass player of the band, founding member, and backup singer, background singer, part-time singer. I don't know how you want to word that. But Greg is our guest. And got to say, that was a good choice.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Chip. Our publicist texted me in the middle of the interview and told me it was a good choice as well. So everybody at Chipster who I know is listening and critiquing, thank you for listening. Sorry, had to throw that out there. And as a funny aside, my mother is listening, and she texted me and said she doesn't remember not letting me have two albums. So I have a feeling I'm going to have a... Yeah, I'm in trouble after this. So.
What do you want to bet for Christmas you're going to get that album?
Yeah, no, that, I'm... Probably, yeah.
One of the things that I do want to ask about, and that is the creative process. First of all, were these songs basically written and compiled for one project? Because the sequencing, I mean, when you're into the proggy, jazzy kind of sound, that's very important, the sequencing, to make sure that the album works. And this album works brilliantly. So were these songs written with a cohesive project in mind?
Yeah, there is sort of a, I don't want to call it a concept album, although Peter and Paul might disagree. But there was an over, yeah, some of the instrumentals were written as sort of like piece transition pieces to go from one song to the other. So we were very cognizant of the flow of an album, and you know, coming from the music that we listened to and inspired us, that was part, you know, we wanted to make an album that kind of you could put on and listen to the whole thing all the way through.
Right.
And had, you know, sort of that ups and downs of emotions where, you know, it build and it, you know, tension release, that whole sort of thing. And then the final song, Abandoned, kind of being, you know, the soaring work at the end, the triumphant, you know, end piece. So.
Okay. Let's talk about the songs themselves. What is the creative process as far as the songwriting? It looks like Peter and Paul seem to do most of the writing. How does it work within the band context?
Well, it's changed a lot. Originally, it was sort of like a Steely Dan-esque sort of a thing, where like Peter and Paul would come up with an idea and just Z would just be thrown, like, play this. And then eventually I was told, play this. Now it's changed. Now that we're more of a band, it's definitely changed. It's, you know, everybody comes in with ideas and they sort of get bounced around the room. And then usually I come in with something and say, hey, let's make one song that's really simple. And then everybody laughs at me. So the process is really, whoever has a good idea comes up with it. I think like a lot of bands, you know, the other guys in my bands are all incredibly talented musicians. The two guitarists are master guitarists. If they lived in New York or LA or Nashville, they would just be session guys, full-time guys, you know. And our drummer is one of the most eclectic. He's completely inspired in the moment. As a bassist, it's a wild ride, because sometimes I'll be like, where is he going with this? And then it's like, oh, that's really amazing. You know, sometimes the ideas just come from the songs themselves. Like, well, we're playing along and someone will play something. We'll be like, wait, let's take that in a different direction. Again, since we have our own studio, we're really spoiled, and, mm-hmm. you know, we can really tinker and play around with things. So, you know, it's sort of, I wouldn't call it exactly jamming. There's a little bit of that, but it's usually like someone comes in with an idea and then we all sort of pile on that idea.
Okay. Lyrically, you guys are pretty far out there. If you actually read the lyric books, I mean, they're brilliant poetry style verbiage that just opens the door to visuals in your mind's eye. Try to be a martyr with your faith in every fire of the song we just heard, Letting Go. Things like that. And they're talking about martyrdom and soldiers and love. And you cover the gamut of topics, but not in a traditional sense. These words just take you to all over the place. They're as experimental sounding as the music itself. Who is the lyricist?
So I think almost all those lyrics are Peter.
Okay.
I think I changed one word on one song, which I proudly take credit for now that you're giving us a phrase. it's Peter. Usually the song title comes from whoever came in with the idea, and he writes around that. Again, it's always changing, and it's not like if someone came in with lyrics that would be that would be rejected. In fact, I think most of the time, Peter looks at us and says, "Why don't one of you guys write lyrics?" So. But that's all Peter, and okay. I'm sure he's listening right now. So you just made his day.
I love the lyrics. I do. They're very, just like with certain albums by Queensryche. I live for the lyrics. I love the music, but the lyrics really tell the story and create the imagery. And while I'm listening to your music, I'm getting all kinds of different random images in my head. And then I look at the album cover, and it's very unique. Just the pictures alone, they say art is in the eye of the beholder, and you look at that picture on the cover and then on the inside jacket where the same character is there and everything's blurred, you just wonder what is going on in this picture. Is the earth over? Is the earth, are aliens in there? Who is this guy with the mask? I mean, and then you listen to the music and your mind just wanders. I just got to say, it's one of the best albums I've heard in a long time as far as this style. So kudos to that. And
thank you.
Evolutionary. If you go back and you mentioned Rush, or you go back and you mentioned, let's say Pink Floyd from the early years, the Syd Barrett years to the latter day. The music has evolved. You almost don't realize it's the same band. How has that been? I know you've got a shorter term than either of those groups, but how has the music evolved since you guys first started recording? Like, let's project to album number two that's coming out whenever. Is the songs you're writing now similar to these, or are you taking them to a new scope?
Well, I don't know that we're going to do an album right away. I think with the way the world is now, our plan is to do a couple of EPs. Like 2-3 song EPs, and because of the nature of the type of music we write, which is complex and not easy to play and all that, I think we want to put out music sooner rather than later. So
okay,
so I think our plan is to do a couple of EPs, which we've already started on. I think the thing about bands changing styles is at the end of the day, the goal is to sound like them still.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think the new album will probably be a little bit heavier than this album. I can't say that for sure. There's three or four songs. There's one song that we've already kind of recorded, and there's the new EP, and there's a couple songs that we're working on. It's a little bit heavier, but I think at the end of the day, it still sounds like us, and it still is, the music is still as eclectic, and it's still, it's the same thing. I don't think you'll be like, wow, this is a different sounding band. Hopefully we keep getting better as songwriters and keep writing more interesting stuff. But we do come from I remember reading an interview with Billy Joel where they said, well, why don't you just do another Glass Houses? And he was like, well, we've already done that, And
right.
So our attitude is like, if one of us comes in with a song and it sounds like something we've already done, it's like, well, okay, we've already done that. So we do want to explore different things. Our attitude is, as long as we like the song, that's all that matters to us. As I mentioned, we're a DIY band. This is our, it's like a glorified hobby, And so the only thing we care about is that we really love the songs. We don't care about trends. We don't care about, trying to appeal to, the entertainment magazines or anything. We're writing music that we like to play, that we find fun. And we know there's an audience out there, but, and that's great, but we're not concerned with all of that. It's really about us writing music that means something to us and that we're proud to be a part of. And so whatever genre that comes from, it'll come from. And in the end of the day, because it's the four of us making, it'll sound like us.
All right. If you want to keep up with the band, listeners, it's epictantrum.com. You'll find videos and music and merch and some more information on the group, some great pictures. Don't forget that there's a special benefit going on Saturday, November 21st, near and dear to my heart, helping the Humane Society. And lots of different guests on that will be taking part. Many that were on this show, Joe Bouchard of BOC, Uriah Heep, I've had Doro on, we've had Gentle Giant members on in the past, and so many more great talents. And again, you can find out information on that at seaoftranquility.org, and that is Saturday, November 21st, 7 p.m. Eastern. And one thing I do want to ask, and that is, on this album, you guys are listed, and on the website too, listed only by your first names, and I was just wondering what the mystique is on that.
Our drummer, it goes by Z. I think I knew him for 2 years before I knew his real name. And when we were coming up with the album credits, he said, just list me as Z. And then it just sort of became a joke. Well, I'll just be Greg. And I think part of it is I, you know, obviously our names are out there, our full names.
Right.
His not. So, but part of it was an attempt to, like, let's not focus on the personalities, let's focus on the music. So much of music today is the personality and the music second, and we didn't want that. So we wanted this to really be focus on the music, the images, the words, and all that, not the people making it, which was sort of like what Pink Floyd did for a long time.
Right.
We definitely were inspired by that idea, that, you know, that's what we wanted people to look at. It is funny, though, that a lot of people have noticed that. So I think we'll go. Might even change that up in future releases just to be even more weird. Like, maybe we'll all just be one initial or something.
Okay. Name Epic Tantrum. Is there a story behind that? And we'll let you go.
I've changed this story a bunch of times. I don't really have a new funny version.
Okay.
We were just trying to come up with a name, and our drummer kept coming up with Messiah. And he wanted Messiah in everything. So it was like, and at one point, someone had said Epic Messiah. And at some point, someone else said Messiah Tantrum or Tantrum Messiah or something like that. And it was literally like Epic Tantrum came, you know, like from that. Like, it was just putting words together. So luckily, cooler heads prevailed, and we didn't use the name Messiah at all. And although we do keep joking, we're going to name a song, you know, with use Messiah in it. And, and I just think the name is just... It's a cool name, you know. I mean, it's just Epic Tantrum, and I don't know that it's the most, the names of bands kind of, like, the Beatles isn't really a great name, but, you know, it's a great band, and so, you know, I think eventually the name kind of just becomes synonymous with the music, but I do love the name. I think it's funny. We've done some designs of, like, t-shirts with, like, babies crying and stuff. We've never actually made them, but it just amuses us. But
okay, so no Butcher Baby.
No. Well, but now that you've given me that idea, I'll be working on that tonight.
There you go. All right. Thank you so much, Greg. I do appreciate
Thank
your time.
Thank you so much for having us on. We appreciate all the attention and all the kind words. And I know that the rest of the band is enjoying, especially Peter, the words you've given. And I'm sure that, you know, my mother will be ready to yell at me as soon as we're off. So
there you go. We have a proggy show on this network here with NPR called The Scope, hosted by Greg Kovach. And he is incredibly knowledgeable about all things proggy and jazzy in the rock world. I'm going to get a hold of Chipster, and maybe we can get one of you guys to focus on his program, which airs Tuesdays at 11 p.m. It's a similar market, but also a different market as well. And I think this would be right up his alley.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much, and thank you for taking the time to listen to the record and all the kind things you've said. And if anybody's listening and they want to find out more, please go to epictantrum.com. Again, thanks to Chipster PR for setting this up, and thank you to you and your staff for taking the time to interview us and listening to the record and actually, you know, taking the time to read the lyrics and the whole thing. That's pretty awesome.
All right. Greg Ross has been my guest. He is with Epic Tantrum, as he said, epictantrum.com. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll get Freddie Salem of the Outlaws on. You remember those guys, Southern Guitar Army, the Triple Guitar Army. Freddie will be joining us momentarily. We'll play a few songs from the live recording of 1981. But first, let's leave you with the title track of the Epic Tantrum album. This is Abandoned. Freddie, coming up.
change inside.